Welcome to Culture at Work, the podcast that explores how to maintain a strong corporate culture in a rapidly changing world. I'm your host, Tim Carroll, inviting you to learn from industry leaders on how to build an exciting culture to bring people back to the office and inspire them like never before. Today on the podcast, we have Chester Elton. Chester Elton has spent two decades helping organizations engage their employees in organizational strategy, vision, and values. He's been called the Apostle of Appreciation by Canada's Globe and Mail newspaper, and his work has been called fascinating and refreshing by Fortune magazine. He is co-author of the books All In, The Carrot Principle, Leading with Gratitude, and Anxiety at Work, which have all been New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestsellers. His books have been translated into 30 languages and have sold more than 1.5 million copies worldwide. Chester is a founding partner of The Culture Works and has served as a leadership consultant and executive coach to firms such as American Express and the World Bank. This was an extremely insightful conversation, so let's get right to it. Chester, thank you so much for joining today. I really appreciate it and just love your book, love the topic, love everything about this. But and before we dig in, because we're going to get really deep into this all-in culture, but could you be so kind as to define for us, which I do every time in the podcast, ask everybody's definition of culture. So what is your definition of culture?
Yeah, a great question. We talk about an all-in culture is a place where people believe what they do matters and they make a difference. And I always add to that, and when they make a difference, it's noticed and celebrated. To me, everybody owns the culture, right? And initially, as you act out your mission, vision, and values, it's kind of what you do. When the culture gets really good, when it's all in, you go from what you're doing to who you are. And if you really believe that what you do matters and you make a difference and it's celebrated, that's a great culture.
Yeah, I've heard some people say that it's the personality of the company, right? It's kind of who everybody is when no one's around, you know?
And when nobody's watching, yeah.
That's right, that's right. What do you think the world of video conferencing, work from home, all of that, what do you think that's doing to the world of culture? Being somebody that really kind of believes in culture, believes in that human interaction, what do you think that's doing to culture?
Yeah, I think it's making it harder. There's no question. I believe we're social animals and that we need to find ways to get together. And it's a question I get asked often. And so I think it makes it more difficult. I think the great leaders figure it out. You know, you figure it out. And whether it's video conferencing and working from home, where you take time to just talk to people about their lives and connect, because you don't have that chance to do the walk by of the cubicle or the office or grab a bite to eat. I personally think a great way to build relationships and culture is to eat together. I honestly believe it's kind of a sacred thing. You know, it's back to our tribal roots that we feed each other, we sustain each other. That's what a tribe does. I just had an amazing dinner last night in Manhattan with about 20 to 25, I think it was closer to 25 business people, mostly chief human resource officers. And we talked about that there's something about eating together that is really interesting. The smells, the taste, and so on. And I related an interesting study that we came across. Adrian Gostick's my co-author, as you know, and we're constantly looking for great research and great stories. There was a study that was done on firehouses. And listen to this, Tim. They said that they would come in and they could tell if they had a good culture if they ate together. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
That if they didn't eat together, they knew there was something wrong. And they drilled down and they said that the firehouses that ate together, they had quicker response times, they had better survival rates, and on and on and on. And one of the key factors that they look for immediately is they'd come at lunch and they'd say, you know, who's eating what where? Isn't that funny?
That is, you know, and it plays into, you know, we've had like Corey Carlson, who wrote a book about Win at Home First. And, you know, that idea of building culture at home and, you know, breaking bread together, making sure you're eating dinner Absolutely. Together and having those conversations. It's just, that's the first thing I thought of when you said that was, hey, that's how important it is at home too, right? I mean, it's important at home. It's important in the office. I think that's where we drop our walls, right? And then because we're all eating, we're all enjoying it. And then there's no pretense, I think, a lot of times when we're eating.
It's so wonderful that we're down this pathway because my wife, Heidi, when we first got married, we were a typical young couple. You know, anything that was cheap, we ate it. You know, it was tomato soup and grilled cheese sandwiches and drive-thrus at McDonald's and so on. Over the years, she's really focused on her cooking skills. And I even sent her for a boot camp at the CIA, not the one you're thinking about.
It's
the Culinary Institute of America.
Oh, wow.
It's so interesting. I know the chairman there, and he said, we formed the Culinary Institute of America. And the next year, they formed the Central Intelligence Agency. So he says, we're the original. And anyway, the point is, she took a boot camp, went up with her sister, and really started to refine her cooking skills. And it's always amazing. It is her greatest act of love to our family. She will cook for hours and we'll eat it in 30 minutes. You know what I mean? It doesn't right. seem fair, right? And yet she always asks, did you like the flavoring there? What could have made it better? And so on. And I always say, yeah, honey, I'm amazed that, hey, how you can focus for that long to make a meal and time it all out and get it on the plates. And to her, it's an act of love. And I think, you know, in great cultures, it's not just what you do and how you do it. It's why do you do it? There's an emotional connection to work, and not just an emotional connection to maybe your products and services. There's an emotional connection to each other. We're not going to let each other down. We're going to build each other up. We're going to support each other. And that's what's been so great about the research we did for All In, because you talk about work that matters, people that matter to you, right? And how do you engage, enable, and energize each other was the core of what we determined was the All-In roadmap. And, you know, we talk about engagement all the time, but enablement, are we supporting each other? And then that energy, that what we do really does make a difference, right?
Well, I mean, that's a good segue. So the title is All-In, How the Best Managers Create a Culture of Belief and Drive Big Results. So I want to ask you, how important is belief from your employees, and how does one instill that in the employees? How do you instill belief that they can have belief in what you're doing? How do you do that?
You know, that's the billion-dollar question, right? Because the companies that do it well outperform everybody, and the companies that don't get it languish. As always, and you know, this is no big revelation, it starts with the leaders. It starts at the top. And if you've got a leader that's passionate, a leader that really believes that we're on a mission, whether it's to put a man on the moon or create amazing memories in your restaurant, right? That ripple effect is tremendous. Where a lot of leaders, you know, stumble is they don't get the next layer of leadership buying in with the same passion. And, you know, because you can have an amazing leader, if that's all you have, it's not going to work. It needs to cascade through the entire organization. So you've got to get your next level leaders really understanding. And how does that happen? I'm a big fan of you need to spend time with each other. You know, it's time getting to know each other, getting to know your stories, getting to know what motivates you. And then the hiring process has to be amazing. You've got to hire right. We did a bunch of work with the Hard Rock Cafe. And I love using them as an example because your waiter or waitress at the Hard Rock Cafe, I guarantee you, is much different than that Michelin, you know, star restaurant. I mean, you know, there's tattoos, there's piercings, the music is loud. You know, it's all about the experience. And the reason I say, particularly at the Hard Rock Cafe, is if you've been to a Hard Rock, I'm sure you have, right?
Sure, Tim? Absolutely. Yeah. All over.
Yeah, and we do, right? We collect the pins. I've been to the Hard Rock in London, in Munich, in Paris, and whatever. How's the food?
Can't remember.
Yeah, I mean, by the way, it's okay. Yeah. You know, I mean, you didn't say horrible. It was okay. The burgers are good. You know,
not what you're there for, really.
Yeah, pulled pork sandwich, great.
Yeah.
It's not why you go there.
Yeah.
Isn't it interesting? They formed a whole amazing brand of a restaurant chain that really food is not the is not their focus, right? We go there to get the t-shirts and the pins and joke with the waitress and dance on the tables and you know, whatever.
The memorabilia, yeah.
Yeah. So my point is, you know, the philosophy at the Hard Rock Cafe is there's a little bit of rock star in everybody. And so when you come to the Hard Rock Cafe, we want you to rock out, you know, tap into that inner rock star, right? Well, you go to, and by the way, and it does vary from Hard Rock to Hard Rock, right? There's those that really get it and you walk in and you feel it, to your point, it's a feeling. You walk in, you get it right away. And they're having fun with you right when you step through the door. And they're passionate about it. They want to create an experience. And it is, it's never lost on me. I always ask the waiters, so when's your next album coming out? You know, they go, from your lips to God's ears, you know.
Yeah, well,
it's always a lot of fun.
Especially here in Nashville.
Well, yeah, where you are, Music City, USA, right? Everybody's writing a song or forming a band.
And so you mentioned something about hiring criteria. And I think that's very interesting. What are some guideposts to that, to be able to, you know, hire the right people in order to have a better chance to instill belief?
Such a good question. I always say, look, do you know their stories?
Yeah.
You know, where did you come from? How did you get here? Like, what do you want to accomplish while you're here? And why are you interviewing with us?
Yeah.
You know, it might be, hey, it just came through my LinkedIn feed and I thought it sounded interesting. Okay, great. Well, tell me a little bit about your background. And then, you know, once you know somebody's story, I think everything changes. And I'll give you a perfect example. I was working with this really brilliant young guy, liked him a lot. We'll call him Winston, because actually that's his name. And Asian, right? And, you know, as Americans, Asian can mean anything, right? We don't, are you Japanese or are you Chinese? You know, that's the old Hill cartoon. And I said, so tell me a little bit about your background. He says, well, my family comes from Vietnam. And I said, great. He says, and I'm kind of a caboose kid. My parents had me when they were much older. I was kind of unexpected. I said, well, tell me about your folks. He said, well, they, at the end of the Vietnam War, they literally jumped in a dinghy and rowed out into the ocean. And some U.S. sailors scooped them up and saved their lives. And they've come here to America and they got citizenship and they work really hard. They've got a whole group of nail salons that was what they did, and brought in friends and family and just worked, you know, 18-hour days was not unusual. And all of a sudden, this young man became very different to me, right?
Yeah.
I understood his incredible value of education and his hard work ethic and his connection to family. And how important that was. Well, knowing that, it was a lot easier for me to put him in a situation where he could thrive, because I knew his story. So I think those questions are really important. You know, where did you come from? Why are you interviewing here? And if you're a new manager and you're taking over a team, you know, what do you want to accomplish here? And where do you want to be in 3 years? And then you can uncover people's passions, because to really have an all-in culture, to really be extraordinary, you have to be passionate about what you do. My father, I remember when I was very young, he said, Chess, there's no substitute for enthusiasm. You know, and it's true, right? You know this in Nashville. You go to concert, you know, the Bluebird Cafe, right? You know the artists and the writers that just have fallen in love with their craft.
Yeah, you can tell.
Yeah. I always like it when the songwriters get up and they pull out their guitars, and those guitars have been around the world. Oh. I mean, they are held together with duct tape, and yeah. You know, and yet that's their baby, right? Like, yeah. They would never think of putting that out for recycling, you know? And so there are those clues, like the worn out guitar. We were at a Bruce Springsteen concert here in New Jersey. If you live in New Jersey, Bruce Springsteen is deity. Forget rock star.
Yeah. My wife is from New Jersey. I mean, you got to go see Bruce.
Yeah, the boss
in your life.
Yeah, well, we went and saw him at the football stadium. So, you know, it was me and 60,000 of my closest friends. And of course they zoom in. It's so great to go to concerts now because they've got the high def screens and the whole bit. And they zoomed in on his guitar and I went, baby, that guitar's got miles on it. It's got miles on it. And sounds great. And he sounds great. Now, here's what's really interesting. Since your wife is a Springsteen fan and a Jersey girl, and Jersey girls don't pump gas. I'm sure she's told you that story.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah. is that Springsteen, his whole life, has suffered with anxiety and depression. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
He wrote his book, Born to Run, and he talks about it. And he says, you know, the one place where I just feel amazing, the one place where I am whole, is when I'm performing. I think he's 73 years old and he's still touring. And he says, I'll tour till I drop, because that is my happy place.
Well, you know, if I had 60,000 people screaming at me, too, that'd be my happy place. I get it.
Well, and here's the thing though, Tim, and while we're on the Springsteen, ramp, he's still releasing great stuff.
No doubt.
A Letter to You, that album, is one of my favorites.
He's phenomenal.
Yeah. And so that passion, even in his 70s, is producing world-class songs.
Well, and I always say, look, vision and passion, that wins the day. If you can have that, to leaders, I say to it all the time, if you can have vision and passion, people will follow. They will follow because they want to know that there's someplace we're going, and they want to go there with somebody who truly believes it's possible. And so I agree with that wholeheartedly. You know, for us, you talk about hiring criteria. We use the guidepost of our values.
Right.
And so I tell you, we did an early, when I first came to Working Spaces, we did an early exercise to kind of define those values. And to this day, that's what we use in the hiring process. And we've moved on from some people over the years that maybe didn't align. Doesn't mean they're bad people. They just, this wasn't their home.
Right.
And that was, got them one step closer to finding their home. So that was an important thing for us to do, to have that as our guidepost in our hiring practice. Do you find that to be a good guidepost or an incomplete guidepost? Or, you know, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, Tim, it's not a good signpost. It's an excellent signpost.
Okay, good.
it is a very, very important signpost. And you said a couple things there that really resonated with me that are very insightful, and you're absolutely on the right track. Is, do your values line up? And sometimes they don't.
Right.
And that's okay. And then you said something that I think a lot of leaders need to really understand. It doesn't mean they're bad people. It's just not a good fit. I mean, take it back to, you know, days when you were young and single and dating. There were wonderful, you know, people that you dated, and it seemed like they, you know, there should be a good fit, and there just wasn't. And it wasn't that they were bad people. It just, you didn't fit together well. I think leaders so often have a savior complex, and they'll have somebody on their team, right? And it's not working out and they're not producing. And they're convinced that they can turn it around and they can get them passionate. They can, and sometimes you just can't.
I've been accused of that over the years. I've done that early on. Yeah. I've thought I could change people.
Well, and here's what happens. You know, initially you don't have a good fit on your team, and friction starts to happen, right? The values don't align, the work ethic, whatever it is. Initially, your team goes, okay, that person's out of line. And if you want to use the word blame, right, they blame that person, not a good fit. Well, the longer it goes on and the more you try to save them and keep working around them and making them the exception, then the blame transfers from the problem child to you, the leader. And that's very dangerous because now you start to lose the team. Right. Adrian and I had a training company. We were working within a bigger company, and we had a trainer, and he was a lights out great trainer. The salespeople loved him. The clients loved him, treated the rest of the team badly. And, you know, and so I'd go to get advice. I was an early leader, right? And they'd say, well, you know, you got to manage around your superstars, you know, like the Jordan rules. The rules are different for Michael and blah, blah, blah. So we did, and we did, and we did. And, you know, I'm getting all this advice from people I trust. And I think, okay, you know, and they're saying, and they were saying it because they liked them. You know, yeah. They didn't know the backstage stuff, right? And finally, we just had it. And we called him in and we said, look, this just isn't working. And you're unhappy because of your interactions, and we're unhappy. So we're going to part ways. And we sent him off, I think, with dignity. We gave him a nice severance package and the rest. Well, and we were afraid. You're always afraid. Well, you know, he was a star, right? Revenues are going to go down. The morale on the team skyrocketed. I mean, literally, you know, you've done the right thing when the bigger party is the party they throw after the person leaves,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And we doubled our revenues the next year.
Wow.
So to your point, and not a bad guy, right. Bad fit. So yeah. I think that signpost is a really good one. Do they line up? And the old adage, and I know sayings are trite, the thing is they work, right, is hire slow. Let your team be involved in the process. You know, get a feel for him. Maybe you can bring him in as a contractor for a little while. Hire slow, fire fast.
That's right.
Fire fast. If they're toxic, you know, it's a cancer. What do you do with a cancer? You catch it early and you cut it out.
It's unfortunate that it takes some wrinkles on your face to kind of learn that point, you know, hire slow, fire fast. So in your book, you talk about, you know, what I believe what I do matters and it's rewarded.
Right.
And I think that is so important. I really do. And I truly think you can tell a lot about an organization by what they reward. You can tell a lot about what they value by what they reward. So what are some ways to reward employees for what happens within the, and what are some things that they should be rewarded for?
Yeah, I want to echo what you just said there. You reward what you value.
Yeah,
and it's a very powerful message. You know, it's interesting that we followed up our book All In with a book called Leading with Gratitude, and it's so interesting to me that when you create a culture of gratitude, it's one of the easiest things you can do as a leader. It costs you virtually nothing. Right. It's time. And we'll get to some of the rituals that we've seen with organizations that are really great. And yet somehow we get caught up in the multitasking and the pressure that, and we just forget, you know, we forget the civility, the common sense, the kindness. So if you've really defined your values and your mission carefully, and most organizations do, they spend a lot of time putting their mission, vision, and values together. Then when you recognize it, you call out those values. For example, if you have a value of extraordinary customer service going above and beyond, and you have somebody on your team that, you know, whether it's in a call center or in a retail setting, whatever it might be, really goes above and beyond. A customer comes in that's really upset, the product they bought doesn't work and it seems to be out of warranty or all this frustration, and they take care of it, they replace it, they put the warranty in place, and they send them skipping out of your store, you know, a forever customer. Well, when you see that, you bring the team in and say, you know what, team, I got to tell you, I saw Tim in action today. And there was a customer that came in and I wasn't sure if we were going to have to call 911 or what, but that customer was hot, you know. And by the time they left, and here's what Tim did. And you know what that is? That's extraordinary customer service. Is that one of our core values? Absolutely. You want to know what extraordinary customer value looks like? Look no further than Tim. You can do that in a minute. You can do that in a minute. And the whole team gets the message. Tim feels great. I'm using you as an example because I'm sure you're an extraordinary customer service. Right?
Thank you.
Yeah. And it lifts the whole team. I didn't write him a check. I didn't give him a promotion. I just called it out.
The interesting thing you said was today.
Yeah.
Tim did this today. It's immediate feedback. It's immediate reward and recognition, right? Is that, am I wrong in thinking that is, it's not too dissimilar to raising children, right? It's immediate reward and recognition.
Yeah, or training your pet dog. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, children and dogs, very similar. Anyway, it's, yeah, we talk about there's four things that you need to do for effective gratitude and recognition is do it now.
Yeah.
Primacy, recency. The closer the praise is to the behavior, the more likely it is to be repeated, right? So do it now. Do it often. You know, if you want to really reinforce that value of extraordinary customer service, you call it out often. This is what we do. On-time delivery. Like if you're working at FedEx or UPS, look at that's we're graded by on-time delivery, right? And we're going to call that out. Safety is a great one. You know, safe cultures, manufacturing stuff, they talk about it ad nauseum. You know, how many safe days, you know, yeah, calling out, right, that, you know, wearing your hat, washing your hands, whatever. So do it now, do it often. Now be specific. This is really key. We have a wonderful saying in our teaching that general praise has no impact. And I love the leaders that come in and go, hey, great job, everybody. Great job. You're the best. You're the Tower of Pisa. You know, they've got their little finger guns going, you know, and it's and like, what? Like, what? Like, they leave and you go, what the heck was that? what just happened there? Specificity is really important. Did you see what Tim did with that customer, with the warranties, with the packaging, with the restocking fee, whatever it might be, right? That's what we're talking about. So now you go, oh, okay. Great customer services. Check that box, that box, that box. And then the last one is sincerity. You gotta, you know, people know when you're just going through the motions, right? Specificity goes a long way to sincerity, right? General praise. Great job. Doesn't mean anything. Specificity makes it sincere. And that you really care. You know, people know when you care. They just do, you know. And I'll tell you one other thing is, when you express that gratitude and give that recognition, make sure that's all you do. For example, you don't want to say, hey, everybody gather around here. Listen, invoices aren't matching up with orders. I got a call from the home office and they're breathing down my neck. So please, you know, check your paperwork. Oh, by the way, we got this. Tim did a great job today. You know, and then at the end, Tim, you know, keep up the good work. But listen, don't forget invoices, orders.
Right. That's a great point.
Yeah. You know, that it's the event. There's nothing else that matters. We're focusing on you, your great work, our core value. And isn't it great to work here?
We're going to break away for just a quick message and we'll be right back after this. At Working Spaces, we do much more than just sell furniture. We immerse ourselves in the culture of each and every client and then create spaces that inspire creativity, inspire productivity, and inspire connectivity. So if you're looking to create an office space that inspires your employees to want to come back to the office, collaborate face-to-face, and do their best work every day, contact Working Spaces. Working Spaces, the innovative leader in office furniture and design since 1999. Now in 6 markets nationwide. Welcome back to Culture at Work. So we have a platform, and I would highly encourage others to do this, but we have a platform that we use that allows peer-to-peer recognition. And so they are loaded in with points every month, and everybody's encouraged to recognize somebody on the team that's helped them out, right? And there's a couple of caveats. I mean, you've got to name who it is, you've got to put the amount, but you have to tie it to a value. So it has to be, you know, team player or positivity or communication or, you know, one of our values. And, you know, I think just by virtue of that, and then they can use these points to go off and buy swag in our swag shop, or they can get, you know, gift cards to dinner, or, you know, just whatever they want to do. But I loved it because it was a way for us to ingrain the values in everybody without, you know, just cramming it down their throat. You know, I've worked for companies that, okay, they've laminated them. You better have it in your pocket. If one of the executives comes up to you and asks, you better be able to pull it out and show that you have the values cards. And I mean, what, whatever. If that works for people, that does. But this, I felt, was a more organic way to really impress upon everybody what our values are. So there's technology out there that can help with that recognition as well. But I firmly agree with you about the recognition piece.
Yeah. See, I'm a big fan of those as well, because, you know, as leaders, sometimes we think that it's a top-down process, right? It's I give the recognition to you, right? The SHRM statistics, you know, the Society for Human Resource Management, the biggest impact on an employee's engagement score is the relationship with their immediate supervisor, you know. And I say, okay, great, I get that. And I get, if you've got a bad boss, life can be pretty miserable pretty quick. Right. I think what it misses, though, is we're also kind of responsible for our own engagement. You know what I mean? I mean, we got to take responsibility for ourselves. And because of that mantra that's gone through all kinds of HR departments, is we as leaders think that we have to do everything. And so all the recognition, well, there's no way you can see everything. You know, you got managers that manage a team of 100 people. There's no way. And you ask yourself, who owns the culture? Well, it certainly starts with the leaders and the parameters, the mission, vision, values, all that good stuff. And that's all the framework. In great cultures, everybody owns the culture. So of course you should give each other the opportunity to, and whether it's points or it's just simply a decorated email with emojis and fireworks or whatever it is that says, hey, I noticed what Susan did today, and you should notice it too. She was amazing, right?
Yeah.
Those little touches along the way, those are little deposits. Now, I want to share a very personal story with you, and you can edit this out if you choose. But I grew up in an effusively affectionate family. I mean, we should have been Italian. We're not, but we should have been, right? I mean, lots of embraces, lots of hugs, lots of kisses, and lots of positive affirmations, right? We told each other we loved each other every day, all day. My dad was a radio announcer and a performer, and my mother was a model. And I mean, they were extroverts, and that's what you get, right? Five boys in my family. So we all get married, and I marry my lovely wife, Heidi Olson. And she grew up, her father was an engineer, much different, you know, was an army engineer.
Yeah.
And so we get together and, you know, I'm telling her I love her 100 times a day. And she's going to, I'll tell you a funny story. So she buys into it. It's making her feel good. She goes back and sees her dad and she says, Dad, I just want to let you know how much I really love you. Cause they didn't say that a lot in their family. Yeah. And he said, well, you know, Heidi, we like all our kids. which by the way, for Boyd, and by the way, salt of the earth, best guy you'd ever know.
Yeah,
that was a big step for him.
Right.
Right. So anyway, so we've been happily married for 40 years. At least I think we've been happily married. You might want to check. She may say 36, but at any rate, one Saturday morning, we didn't have the grandkids over and we didn't have any obligations. And so we were just kind of chatting a Saturday morning. And I said, honey, I'm curious, because we have a deal that she has to die first because I can't live without her. She'd be fine without me, but I'd be a mess without her, right? I said, you know, we have that deal that you're going to die before me. So I'm curious, when I'm gone, what will you miss most? And she said, I've actually thought about that, which was a little disturbing.
I would think so.
Are you planning my demise? Anyway, and I said, really? What? She says, I will miss all the little touches, all the little encouragements, all the little I love yous that you give me every day. And I thought, there's no better answer.
That's right.
So I tell you that long story and edit it up however you like. But the point is that's a principle that works in a very healthy relationship. Those are principles that we shouldn't just leave at home. We should take them to the workplace.
Right.
And that frequent, specific, and timely, and be sincere, it works there too. And by the way, for leaders that are really good at it in the workplace, don't forget to take it home. I mean, you know, you don't That's create true. Just a good work life and then a good home life. Create a good life. These principles work everywhere you go.
Yeah, there's a great book called Treat Me Like a Customer. And it talks about, you know, bringing that home and, you know, you treat your customers so great. Now come home and treat your family that way as well. So that's great. So speaking of leading with gratitude, you've opened the door to the gratitude conversation. How does one kind of work out that gratitude muscle to make it stronger, better, faster, all of that going forward so we can all be, you know, more, you know, have more gratitude in our life?
Yeah, I love this question because it's a skill like anything else and nobody's good at it right away. I mean, maybe there's an exception here and there. My point is on your leadership journey, you develop and you exercise and you fine tune various leadership muscles. And this is one of them. And this is a critical one, I think, more than ever now, because of the generations that are coming into the workplace that are looking for guidance and coaching, and they're looking for teachers and they're looking for affirmation to make sure they're on the right track. So it's a discipline like anything else. I'm a big fan of tokens and rituals. You mentioned your platform. That's a ritual. And those points are tokens. And it's ongoing. And you can go into that, you know, dashboard and you can see who's got a bunch of points and what values are being recognized this week.
That's right.
And that's the fun thing is the data on the back end.
Right.
You know, say, by the way, we haven't had anybody, you know, recognized for honesty. We should probably focus on that one a little bit, you know, before the auditors come in. My point is set goals, be disciplined about it. We have a wonderful customer up in Canada. It was called FYI Doctors. It's this, they bring all these obstetricians that had their little one-off practices and they brought them into a big group. And they talk about a coaching culture. They literally send out coaches to help them run their businesses. So they take all the accounting and everything on the back end so they can focus on be good eye doctors, right? Yeah. And they have a rule called 10 and 10. And they coach them up on how to do this. They said, we want you to start the day with 10 minutes of not just going over what we're going to do during the day, which is important. You know, we've got customers coming in, and make sure that you carve out time to talk about people that are doing a great job, reinforce the core values, and get people pumped for the day, right? And then at the end of the day, take 10 minutes. They call it 10 and 10. He said it was really interesting when they started to implement this. At first, you get the classic eye roll. Come on. People know they're doing a good job. You know, Jack's a professional. He doesn't need me to tell him. He knows it. I said, yeah, try that with your wife over a few years and you'll be talking to a divorce lawyer before you know it, you know? And so carve out, what are your tokens and rituals? A Texas Roadhouse. You've eaten at a Texas Roadhouse, I'm sure.
Of course.
So fun. Yeah. I mean, you know, the music, the line dancing, the roles that are addictive.
Yes.
They have what they call the Rally Alley every morning. And they call their employees roadies, which I love. Like in Nashville, you get what a roadie is, right?
Yeah.
So if you work at Texas Roadhouse, you're a roadie. And they get them pumped and they talk about, hey, we did this yesterday. We're going to do this today. And here's Sam and here's Sue and here's Jack. And by the way, if your line dance is losing a little oomph, you know, make sure you get Denise in there. She'll bring the energy and the positive. And those roadies are, I mean, it's like a pep rally before your homecoming football game. And then at the end of the day, they send them off and say, hey, thanks for a great day's work. I mean, so, but it's baked in. Like they don't miss, you don't open the doors until you have your Rally Alley. You don't open the doors until you do your 10. One last example is a hospital in Dallas, Texas. A dear friend of mine, he then went to teach at the University of Texas. I think he's at BYU now, but incredible executive, built great teams. He would call it the Sacred 60, and he required every one of his leaders every day to leave their phones and their laptops in their office and walk around and talk to their people for 60 minutes a day about anything but work. Mm. When I know my leader cares about me and is interested in me and my family, I'm not going to let him down. I just won't. So now I'll share one last ritual with you that is one of my favorites, and I do this personally. I have rocks in my pockets every day. And this is one of the rocks. Some are big, some are small. And it's a rock with gratitude etched on it. And it's a polished river rock. And when I see anybody that's doing a great job, particularly when I know that they're people that don't get a lot of affirmation, I make sure I stop. Like the other day, I was on my morning walk, crossing guard. I said, hey, she goes, you're crossing? I said, no, have you got a minute? She goes, yeah, like, what's up? You know, I said, listen, I don't have kids going to school anymore, but I see them coming every day. And these are my neighbors and my friends. And you guys do such a great job keeping them safe. I don't know that we tell you enough how much we appreciate the simple thing you do every school day. And I have a little gift for you. Can I give it to you? And they go, a gift? And I said, yeah, it's a little good luck gratitude stone. It's a polished river rock. And I love the stones because they're all different and they're all flawed, like you and me. But right. When you throw a rock into a pond, the water ripples. And I love the ripple effect. And the way you keep these kids safe, that ripples through our community and our families. I hope this rock brings you a little good luck. Well, Tim, you'd think I'd given him a Fabergé egg. and my wife is so funny because we'll do it with servers at restaurants. You know, she goes, I'm always amazed. They're so touched. It's like such a big deal. And I keep telling myself, you gave them a rock.
It's perceived value, right?
Absolutely. So those are three examples in my personal little ritual. And you know, I was so funny. I went to pick up some hockey skates the other day. And I talked to the guys and got to know them. And they didn't have my name on the box for the skates I was picking up. It said, these are for the rock guy. And I go, I will own that. I think that's a great brand. My point is figure out what your rituals are, to your point with your platform, tie it to your values, have fun with it. And, you know, it's a rock and yet it's not a rock. I've had people say, you know, I keep that rock in my pocket. And when times get tough, I just squeeze it. And I think of all the things in my life that are going well and that I'm grateful for, and it lightens my load.
You know, I love that story. And you have told me that story before, but I love that story. And I love, it really is, for you, it's just it part of your DNA. Obviously, you're just, this is who you are, what you're doing on a daily basis. But it's got to become a habit, right? It's got to become, you've got to work toward it. It's not going to be easy at first, right? And but you've got to make yourself do this, right?
Yeah. And I love that you call it a habit. And, you know, there was that myth on the internet that 21 days you develop a habit. Maybe if you're gifted, which, you know, I know you long enough and you've known me, neither one of us would be classified as gifted.
That's
special,
right.
Special maybe, but not, special. But not gifted. Yeah. Right? So we actually, our latest book we published is called The Gratitude Habit. And it's a 90-day gratitude journal to a more grateful life. And it's, again, we've gotten such wonderful feedback on this. We just recently came out. In fact, it's not going to be on Amazon until March. But the point is people say, okay, Chester, because of all the things that I know about you and we've been friends, I'll do it. And I'll say, how's it going? They go, look, I'm doing it. Okay. Just I'm doing it. And then time passes. And then you check back in and say, by the way, you're doing that gratitude journal. I'm so glad you asked. You know, at first I was just doing it because you're my friend and you told me to. Right. And then this young woman that my wife and I are mentoring, she said, you know, at first it was hard for me to write three things in the morning, three things at the end. And there's a few other, it takes you 5 minutes tops to do the whole thing. She said, all of a sudden I realized that I didn't have to put just big things. And I started to write down all the little things I'm grateful for. And I just started to smile and it just started to flow. At first it's what you do. And then there's that tipping point. It becomes who you are.
Right.
Because you developed a habit.
That's right. And I just think that's so important. I mean, for me, just full transparency, that's my word of the year is gratitude. I'm wanting to just do everything I can to, by this time next year, just have that same kind of mentality and habit and just be part of my DNA as well. And so, I'm looking forward to getting hold of that book and starting the gratitude habit as well. Well, look, Chester, this has been amazing. I will, again, full transparency, say this is the theme of our year. This is the theme for our year at Working Spaces is all in. We want to be all in. We want the company to be all in. We don't just work for Working Spaces. We are Working Spaces. That's the mentality we want to have with everybody and with our clients. And so this is going to be a great jumping point for us as a company and for anybody that's listening. So Chester, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate your time today.
Listen, it has been a delight. I'm telling you, I would work for you in a heartbeat. Are you kidding? I'm all in. And listen, just in parting, take these principles and take them home. It doesn't just make a better workplace. It makes a better life. Trust me. And who doesn't want that? Bring a little joy, bring a little gratitude. Remember to say thank you. It'll make your mama proud and it'll make your business 10 times better, I promise. Thanks again for the invite, Tim. Call me anytime. This was so much fun.
Will do. Thank you.